Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Okay, today on the show, I'm very glad to have Anna Kelly with us. She's a founding partner of Zenith Capital Group, Apex Multifamily, and REI Mom LLC. She's a former top-ranked financial relationship manager for a private bank, and she began investing in real estate 20 years ago. So we're going to definitely dig in on that story and some lessons learned. She's purchased, renovated, rented millions of dollars of real estate across lots of different asset classes. She's also working full-time, raising four kids, hence REI Mom's the perfect moniker there. She recently retired from a corporate career after creating what a lot of us are after, financial freedom through rental property investing. And so she's got active ownership and manages a portfolio valued at over $60 million, has invested in over 2,000 doors as a limited partner, and she's currently seeking out multifamily investment opportunities for her and her partners. She's a sought-after speaker and also a number one Amazon best-selling author. So without further ado, Anna, how are you? Welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Devin.
Yeah, thank you for jumping on. And for those folks that are listening, I always kind of like to kick it off if they're not already familiar with you, maybe a little bit about your background. And I always like to know how you know what you were doing before real estate and what was the catalyst and how you got into real estate. Maybe you could walk us through that.
Sure. So I'll start. Stop me at any time, Devin, to ask questions. Awesome. But basically, I started out, believe it or not, I grew up in Section 8 apartments in your neck of the woods in San Antonio, Texas. So I knew nobody that had any money, that knew anything about stock market, real estate, nothing. And basically, when I went to college, I decided to study business management, got out, had a corporate job, and somebody, a headhunter, called me and said, "We've heard about you. I had won some awards at my company, and we're looking for some new financial advisors at Bank of America, and someone recommended you. Would you be interested in coming on to our financial advisory program and learning how to be a financial advisor and working for the bank?" So I said, "Sure." Started working for Bank of America, financial relationship manager. So we basically talk to the wealthiest clients in our bank and try to get them to bring us several million dollars a quarter to invest in our stocks, bonds, mutual funds, insurance, annuities. So I, in that process, learned a lot about investments, obviously. And I had a conversation, Devin, with one of my clients about what we could offer in terms of returns. And at that time, they were up in the 12-13% range. And this one client laughed at me, and I was very young. I was, 23, 24 years old. And he said, "I make so much more than that in my real estate holdings." And I thought, I don't know anybody that has real estate. And I hadn't learned anything about real estate, even going through, college and going through my financial advisory training. So I knew at that point, real estate, there's power in that. You can make good returns. And one day, if and when I ever get money, I'm going to invest in real estate. So that's what gave me the very first thoughts about real estate might be a good idea. Around that time, I was also paying a very large rent in Houston, Texas. I had moved to Houston, and I started seeing condos in a complex that I really liked for sale. And I thought, I can buy a condo, have my rent payment basically slashed almost in half by having a mortgage. And then one day when I move out, I can keep it as a rental property. So that's the first thing that I did. I bought a house hack, a little condo in Houston. And that's about as far as I took this real estate thing, because I was still, working on my career, trying to move forward, and still in the accumulation phase. And I didn't think of real estate much beyond that until I got married. And my next investment, I bought a house in a regentrifying area, thinking, buying something with upside is the way to make money in real estate. And I bought, and it didn't happen as fast as I thought it was going to. And I really didn't make a whole lot of money waiting for appreciation. So I thought, this waiting for appreciation isn't really ideal either. And I didn't think much more about real estate after that. Continued to work in the corporate world. At that point, I had moved to work for AIG and went in their variable products division to teach people about, to teach their staff about variable products and annuities within their portfolio. And I had a baby, And, you know, before that, Devin, I was very like upwardly mobile. All I thought about was growing in the corporate world, thought that was going to be my path to eventual financial freedom. And when I had a baby, everything changed for me. All I wanted to do was stay home and be a stay home mom. And I thought, you know, I've got to give this baby everything. I don't want to be, you know, working on climbing up the corporate ladder. I can come back to that. And unfortunately, I couldn't because my husband had just graduated chiropractic college. He had six-figure loans, and he was making about a third of what I was at that time as a new doctor. And so I was like, how am I going to get home with this baby when I really have to keep working to provide? And all these HGTV shows had just started in 2003. So I was on bed rest. I was home for 3 months, and I was convinced flipping houses is the way to do it. I'll flip a house too. I'll replace my six-figure income, and I'll be home in no time. And that was in 2003. We had our first, our baby was 3 months old when we bought our first flip in the Heights area of Houston. We made lots of first-time rookie mistakes because we had no idea what we were doing other than just having a basic financial acumen. And we lost money. So we thought flipping is not the way to go. And my husband said, we're not doing that again. So what did we do in 2007? We thought, okay, the only way for me to get home is for my husband to start his own practice. So we sold our home in Houston, moved to central Pennsylvania. And in looking for space to lease that was very expensive, I saw a couple buildings for sale on the main street that had commercial on the bottom and apartments on top. I thought, I've had a rental. Maybe we buy a building to save a little bit of money, have the tenants help cover the mortgage, and that'll give us a little more safety because my job at AIG had agreed to a 3-month work from home gig in Pennsylvania to see how it went. So I thought I may be losing my job. We started a business, Devin, with $700,000 in debt in 2007.
Yes. Love it.
We thought it was a great idea because the economy was doing great. We had no idea about economic cycles and that things might change. And so we started this business. And a year later, the sky fell out and everything almost collapsed. And what sustained us really was having that property and the fact that a few months later, we bought a 4-unit apartment building to house hack. So we lived in a 4-unit building after selling a big house in Houston and had 2 rental properties when the market collapsed and lost almost 2/3 of my 401k in about a week and a half period when everything fell. AIG was about to lay us all off. They told us to prepare for layoffs because they were about to be bailed out by the government to the tune of trillions of dollars. And I thought everything was collapsing. And I quickly realized, Devin, that I couldn't rely on corporate America to provide, no matter how big the company and how big it seemed to not be able to fail. And I couldn't rely on being an entrepreneur. So my husband's business started to really crater as well as healthcare changed and people quit paying for chiropractic visits. And the only thing that remained stable through that period was my couple of rental properties. So I borrowed from my 401k what I had left and I bought another 4-unit building. So I had 3 rental properties that kind of got us through that 2008-2009 crisis. And I determined that real estate was fairly stable. It kept paying cash flow and I wanted more of it. So that was really the epiphany in 08 and 09 that said, I need to be buying more cash flowing properties to create financial freedom so I can finally get home with my babies. And through the crash, it took me many, many years to actually accomplish that. But ultimately, you know, continuing to buy rental real estate is what allowed me to retire a multimillionaire, replace my 6-figure income, and create that financial freedom that I had always dreamed of.
That's amazing. I mean, look, obviously a lot of ups and downs there. I really appreciate that look into your past. I mean, one of the things that sticks out for me is a huge why, right? I mean, you have this maternal instinct here that's like super powerful. And that's, I really resonate with that and having a family and that being this huge magnet pulling me towards this stuff. But then also, I mean, there's a lot of academic type of learning about, you know, all the nuts and bolts of real estate investing, but you got to really kind of viscerally experience this as the world's burning and these are like the only things that are working, right? And you're actually doing it. So, I mean, how did that kind of, I imagine that kind of seared into your brain, this, the connection that you had started years ago after meeting a real estate investor. And then all of a sudden, these are like the only things that are working in a meltdown, right?
Absolutely. You know, I knew that there was some power in real estate. So I had started reading just little bits and pieces here and there about, you know, buying a property. And then when we wanted to flip our property, I read a bunch about flipping, you know, but I never really thought of it as a wealth builder. I just thought of it as something that would get you some chunks of cash that was another investment opportunity. Until really everything started to fall, I really had no idea how stable real estate really could be. I viewed it as another kind of risk like investing in the stock market. And but I knew just because I was always thinking about budgeting and how are we going to make ends meet? You know, what are my other options? I was always thinking about what are my other options. So, you know, I had a work from home job for that few months. And I thought, well, what if AIG lays me off? How can I create additional income? And I knew I wouldn't be able to create another strong six-figure income out of rural Pennsylvania compared to what I made from a major, you know, corporation. And so I just thought having a little extra cash flow will help in case our business fails. So it was really like a stopgap, a extra income to help out. At that point, it wasn't a, this is the path for actual financial freedom. It was just kind of protection. So it wasn't until the AIG almost crashed, the 2-week period when all these companies started to fail, Lehman's and Bear Stearns and then AIG, is what really rocked my world and said, wow, our financial system isn't nearly as stable as I thought it was. My job isn't nearly as stable as I thought it was. And being an entrepreneur isn't nearly as stable as I thought it was. So having that cash flow just helped me to realize that I can at least make ends meet with my rental properties, even if I can't depend on anything else. And it took me a few months, to be honest with you, to really have an epiphany that I can buy more because I was losing everything. You know, I had literally lost almost all of my savings, was losing my job. I didn't have any more money to put at risk because I was already in a really risky situation. And banks had told me, quite frankly, we can't lend to you right now, especially since I worked for AIG and we had so much debt. So it took me a few months to kind of come out and say, you know, I can figure out a way to buy more real estate even without money and even without banks willing to lend. And I started then at that point on a path to educate myself on creative financing, on buying multifamily buildings and how I could eventually build wealth. I just knew it was going to take me some time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you had these fourplexes. How was your occupancy during this kind of 08 situation?
It was actually really, really good. It was surprisingly stable. I did not have many vacancies. I did not have to lower my rents. People needed a place to stay and they stayed. And it was very, very stable, surprisingly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there's in these hard times, in these down cycles, it becomes so glaringly obvious how much kind of fluff there is that we spend money on, whether it's going out to eat or events or different things like that. And I mean, if your business is contingent on that stuff, I mean, that's a lot of that stuff goes in an emergency, but the roof over your head is kind of the last thing to go. Hopefully that doesn't have to go, but it's such a fundamental need. That was one of the things that attracted me to the business model years ago is we're going to go through economic ups and downs. We don't know what the future holds, but housing is kind of like that last thing that you hang on to.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that helped as well, Devin, is where I am. And I talk to people a lot about location, 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 you know, in anything with real estate, but where I am is an area that's very diverse in terms of the industries that are here and the employers. And so even though few employers were starting to lay off in 2009 and a few people were losing their jobs, there were always other employers in that same industry or people were basically able to find jobs in other parts of our area. And so being in basically a class B, B plus area, but having older 4-unit buildings that were much more of a C class unit, I think really helped me because there were people that had to downsize from the nicer, newer, sexier complexes with more amenities, and they were willing to pay a little less rent to live in something that stayed in the area and in our really good school districts. even though I didn't have the bells and whistles and the amenities. So that's something I really learned from as well, and has really helped me in my business model in terms of the types of properties I buy now, because of how resilient I saw those types of properties were in the downturn.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We really just operate in kind of one market, but when I'm looking at deals maybe to passively invest in, I don't like to see big weather risks, you know, if it's on the coast, and I've just seen that go wrong too many times. And I don't like to see too much concentration from an industry, right? Whether it's oil or whatever, because I mean, everybody's susceptible to, and some industries certainly more susceptible than others, but a nice, I call it legs on the table, you know, in an economy, if you've got healthcare and IT and oil and, you know, all these different, you can lose a few legs on the table and it's still not going to get knocked over. But if you only have a couple, you know, a three-legged table, it doesn't take much to topple that thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all about the employers and the growth. And it's interesting, In hindsight, I've studied a lot about economics and I've learned a whole lot more about market cycles and, you know, being prepared for changes. But one of the things that was interesting is in the last great recession in 2008 and 2009, those cities that were anchored by very strong hospital systems tended to do the best. And so having a really strong hospital system within about half an hour is something that I look for as well. And, you know, we're right outside of Hershey Med, which has an amazing children's cancer hospital, and it's a research hospital. And I think that really helped. In fact, I had several high-paying residents and nursing managers live in some of my apartments because they were close to the med center at that time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's one of the reasons we like San Antonio too, really strong medical presence. So what was, you've got the fourplexes, you've got on this path to education, you've kind of seen real estate as a way forward. What was a catalyst for you to move into some of these larger multifamily projects? I think, you know, getting into real estate period is a big step, you know, becoming a interested person to a real estate investor, even if it's just one house, that's a big step. And then another big step I see is going from small real estate investor to, hey, we're going to look at a 50-unit, 100-unit building. What was the catalyst for you and what did that shift look like?
So, Devin, I had learned a little bit about larger complexes and syndication in 2009. I had gone to a conference and learned a little bit about it. I had hired a coach, and unfortunately, she turned out to be a fraud. She ended up in prison. And
oh, wow.
It jaded me. Yes.
Sure.
It jaded me from doing big deals with other people that I couldn't trust. And so, if I could change anything, I would have kept looking at the larger multifamily model sooner than I did. But I learned about it. I read like Dave Lindahl's Multifamily Millions and read about how you can trade up apartment buildings and do a value add. And I thought one day when I get big enough and banks will lend to me, that's what I'm going to do. But I didn't really think about doing it right away. I still was at a point where my husband's job wasn't doing well. The week of the crash, I found out I was pregnant with my third baby. So, you know, I had another child, and AIG, I was holding on to that job. And by the grace of God, I actually did not end up getting laid off, but I had a very complicated job that was very difficult to replace, which helped me. But at the 5-year mark, so about 2014, my division was finally going to be sold. And so I had known I've got to hang on to this job until they lay me off. In the meantime, I'm going to keep buying 40-unit apartment buildings. So I kept, you know, buying a few when I could find them on owner financing and not have to go through the banks. And at the 5-year mark is when AIG said, okay, our division's going to be sold. You're probably going to be laid off. Your package may not be as high as what we thought your package was going to be 5 years ago. And I thought, I have got to do something now. So I just decided I need to start a 5-year plan to aggressively buy 4-unit buildings until I got to the point that I could replace my income, have a year's salary saved, and then retire from the corporate career. So it took me 4 years to do that. And then in the last year, in late 2018 is when I decided, okay, now is the time for me to go bigger and look for my first bigger apartment deal and grab a chunk of cash and acquisition fees and a nice complex that'll provide some additional income above and beyond what I made at AIG to be able to pay for things like my son getting ready to go to college and him needing a car and those kind of things. So I set out for my first larger multifamily apartment building about September of 2018. I found a deal. I brought a couple partners into the deal. It was a 73 unit in Hershey, PA, $6.5 million deal. We closed that one in December of 2018. I found two more smaller multifamily, but they were 31 units and 96 units that I put together through a joint venture type of small syndicate, if you will. And then at that point, I pulled the trigger and retired from AIG in May of 2019. So not quite a year ago.
Outstanding. Well, congratulations. That's a huge milestone too. I mean, you know, talk about transitioning from no investments to small investments, then the transition to larger investments, and then the transition out of a corporate job. That's a story I never get tired of hearing. So congratulations.
Thank
That's awesome.
You. Yeah, it was amazing. You know, what's interesting is the small multifamily is really what allowed me to become financially free and replace right. my income and develop a, you know, a couple million dollar net worth. But I knew that if I knew I wanted to keep growing. I had always had that itch since literally 9 years before that I want to do bigger deals and I want it to become more passive. Because in the small multifamily, we did self-manage a long time and it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. I worked 80 hours a week for almost 12 years between my job and my husband's practice and the property management, you know, of rentals.
Sure.
So I learned a lot on the small stuff and there's a place for it in many portfolios. But I knew that I wanted to scale up into the bigger stuff. And it wasn't until I knew that I had the financial stability and the net worth and the liquidity that I could take down some of these deals with a few partners that I was willing to kind of take the risk and take that leap. In hindsight, do I wish I did it a little sooner? Probably so. You know, since then I've syndicated a couple of deals and, you know, now I'm moving to bigger and bigger deals as well. But I'm glad I kind of did it the slow methodical way in some ways, because I learned so much about every single aspect of the business on the small stuff that was transferable and that's made me, you know, much more productive and better at what I do with the larger stuff now.
Yeah, I think about that a lot because in so many ways, the bigger stuff's easier. I bought a 6-unit as my first one, no partners, and I was out there signing leases on Saturday morning, right? You know, it was on the south side of town, 40 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. A lot of work, arguably not good use of my time, but I could not imagine raising capital at that point. This is years ago, right? But I just couldn't. I'm like, no, I can't take anybody's money. So I talk a lot about with people this kind of concept from Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. The thesis of that book is anything you can conceive and believe you can achieve. And just to really make it simple, I try and explain to people that the conception of the idea is really easy. Hey, I want to be worth $10 million. That's easy. Sure. Achieving it, mechanically pretty easy. You go buy some buildings, put together a lender. The believing part is all the work, right? Is getting yourself to believe that you can go do this. And sometimes the only way to get yourself to believe it is, all right, I'm gonna start with a 5-unit and then I'm gonna do a 10, then I'm gonna do a 20. And it's just funny how much we hear that story. That was my story. I wish I went faster.
Yeah.
I wish I had more faith in myself, but I think maybe that doubt in myself forced me to go through some things. It sounds like you had that experience where nothing wrong with some good old fashioned hard work and starting at the bottom and growing the business, right?
Yeah. I think I became a little more risk averse because of 08 and 09.
Sure.
We had so much that we had to weather and come through and, you know, just to avoid bankruptcy, you know, quite frankly, on the chiropractic side. And so
yep.
we had so much that we had put it, you know, put into just trying to climb out of that, that my vision was kind of clouded in what else is possible because I was so in the weeds of trying to just be okay and stabilize in an economy that wasn't giving me what I thought I could get. You know, I thought I'd get easy loans and I'm financially stable and I've got great credit and I had a financial advisor background. So what bank's not going to lend to me? And when everything happened that did in 08 and 09, it really, kind of rocked my world and my faith in the whole economy and the whole system, that it clouded that what else is possible. For a few years, it was just survival mode, you know? And then once I got out of that, I was like, wow, I've actually achieved financial freedom despite all of this. So now I know I can handle anything and the sky's the limit, you know? So it built my faith, but it took a couple of years to do it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, that's how it goes. And I mean, how do you feel about your skill set? I mean, it sounds like you feel really good about it now, but I mean, is there any substitute for the trial and the hard work? I think sometimes you just have to go through that in order to get that skill set, right?
Yeah, I definitely learned a lot through the small ones. You can read a lot in books, and like you said, it's really not that complicated, but it doesn't mean that it's easy. And so I think until you go through the hard mechanics of all of the different pieces, you don't really learn all there is to know. So you lack some wisdom without experience. You can have the head knowledge, which I felt like I did without going through all of this. But it's going through the mechanics and definitely going through, you know, trials and hurdles that makes you wiser and makes you a stronger person, stronger character, stronger belief in yourself. And it made me much more creative. You know, before it was kind of like, okay, I've got, these are my options. And that's all I could think was what I read. And when you have a lot of hurdles and you've got to jump over them, you know, lenders say no, sellers say no, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough liquidity. I started asking myself, how can I do this? Instead of just, what did the book say? How can I get creative and make something happen that no one else has told me they've ever done? And so going through the mechanics is what gave me that creativity and that faith and that ability to envision something greater and then just jump in and figure out how to handle it. I wasn't that creative and that resourceful until I had to be honest with you.
Yeah, boy, I really appreciate you sharing that. I resonate with that so completely. I wish life wasn't this way, but you know, all of my breakthroughs in my business have come completely backed into a corner. Mm-hmm. And going, well, I have to figure out this next hurdle now. I literally have no choice. I must figure it out. And voila, there's some new thing I never would have come up with. It's happened to me a dozen times and it's always led to growth and it's super scary. But that's where, and I think that's why most people maybe aren't cut out for this. They could do it, but they're not willing to go all the way to that point of being back in the corner in order to figure it out. But once you've done that a bunch of times, you go, I mean, it really grows confidence like nothing else. Unfortunately, that's what it takes, right? Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, I was afraid to do my first larger, you know, 73 unit building. I thought I need $2.5 million. I've got a property under contract. I talked him into selling it to me off market. How in the world am I going to convince someone to give me that much money? There was a fear factor, but I thought, what do I have to lose? I've done many, many things in my life that I didn't feel that I had the skills and, you know, to do. And I just went for it. I learned that unless you go for it, there's more risk in sitting back and losing opportunity. So the first one gave me the confidence to do the next, and that gave me the confidence to go out and syndicate my first deal. And it was much easier each time than I thought it was going to be. So getting over that hurdle of believing in yourself and having the confidence to take action, like you said, you know, it is a critical piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, congratulations on conquering that. In one of Gary Keller's books, I think it's Millionaire Real Estate Investor, he says everything good is on the other side of fear. Everything he wants on the other side of fear. So most people aren't going to go over the fear, but there's a lot there if you can pull it off. So congratulations. So this is, I love hearing about your story. This stuff really gets me fired up, and congratulations. What do you do? You know, now we're talking to 2020. What do you like to do now? And what do you see, you know, as stuff that you're excited to work on and, you know, in kind of the near term?
Sure. I love multifamily. I love real estate. I really love most everything about it, to be honest with you. Yeah. I love the larger stuff, not having to be the property manager and having people that I can hire to do it. So now I'm able to really use my mind and my skills for putting deals together, for helping other investors see the power of real estate and multifamily real estate in particular in their portfolio. I've always loved talking investments and helping people to, you know, further their investment goals and their financial goals. So I really love talking to investors. And I like the challenge of turning around an apartment building and making it from a diamond in a rough to something really beautiful and providing a better community for our tenants. It's something that gives me passion. I think part of it, Devin, because I did grow up in Section 8 housing and it wasn't very nice. I feel and I have compassion for those that are living in rougher complexes, and I get excited about being able to provide them, you know, a nicer place to live. So that's what I love. I've got some projects that are dream projects related to, you know, purchasing a complex like the one I grew up in, or even that particular complex in San Antonio. So that's kind of on my vision board in the future. And I'm kind of balancing my drive right now with this desire that I had that I told you in the beginning to be home with my kids. So yeah. I retired from the full-time job. I worked 70 to 80 hours a week, literally every week for the past 12 to 13 years. So I had to tell myself, when I retire, I'm not going to go huge and grow a huge business. I can, I have the confidence that I can, but I want to cherish these last few years with my kids at home. So I have a junior in high school. We're teaching him about real estate. He wants to do real estate. And really, we're trying to make sure that I'm savoring all the time when they're home from school. So they're between 8 and 16 now. And I'm basically very driven that between, you know, 8 a.m. and 3:30 every single day, I'm all in, I'm growing, I'm buying more properties, you know, I'm seeking after these types of dream projects. But at 3:30 in the afternoon, I'm mom, I'm done. And so, you know, I'm focusing on now kind of that balance between really being all in and totally focused on my kids and my husband at night. And then during the day, just continuing to scale and grow and do what I'm passionate about in real estate.
Love it. It takes such discipline to do that, right? Because for a variety of reasons, I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, you're making the boundaries on time. It's easy to just work all the time.
Sure.
And so to kind of intentionally rein that in takes a lot of discipline, but it's 100% the move to make. So, I love hearing that. And that's something I struggle with too, is the, one of the reasons I got into this is so I could do whatever I wanted. And it turns out I like to work a lot, but I do, temper that with time with the kids and stuff, and just trying to find that balance when nobody's dictating it to you. You've got to kind of create that very proactively, right?
Yeah. And it takes a lot of thought. You know, I've had to really think through some of the things I'm really good at is asset management. And I am asset managing, you know, two complexes in Atlanta that I syndicated that I really like, but it takes a lot of time. So I had to say, how many deals can I really do and be the asset manager? And, you know, quickly the hours start to rack up. So there's this balance of what am I good at? What do I enjoy? But what can I do that I'm making the biggest bang for the hour that I'm putting in without getting overwhelmed and quickly creating another job when I work so hard to have financial freedom to not have to do another job. So I'm still kind of figuring that out, figuring out my best role in different deals that's going to give me continued freedom of my time while continuing to grow, you know, the nest egg and the wealth over time.
Yeah. Yep. Love it. Outstanding. Well, Anna, thank you so much for sharing your story and your insights. I really appreciate it. I know our audience appreciates it. If somebody wants to connect with you, reach out, learn more, what's a good avenue for that?
Sure. So my email is info@reimom.com. My website is zenithcapitalinvestments.com and reimom.com.
Outstanding. We'll link to that in the show notes. And if you're listening now, if you're driving, don't do it now, but you can just click right in the description and see those resources. So Anna, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you so much, Devin. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.